Welcome to the Food and Drink Business Podcast,
your on-the-go bite
of the food and beverage industry.
Welcome to the Food and Drink Business Podcast. My name's Grant McCarran, and today I'm once again joined by Kim Berry, the editor of Food and Drink Business and the host of this show. G'day, Kim. Welcome to our first podcast episode recording of 2022. How are you doing?
I know, 2022. Doesn't it look suspiciously like 2021?
Yeah, I think the dumpster fire has not gone out, not since the 2020.
But you know, growth mindset, Grant. This is our focus for this year, a growth mindset. So focusing on what we can learn and move forward with from challenging times.
So you're not
talking
about the growth of my belly?
No.
Because of all the food I'm packing on while I'm stuck at home.
Grant, Happy New Year to all our listeners. And may 2022 be a fruitful one with less, even just a smidge less drama than we've had for the past poo. I thought, wouldn't that be nice? Do you know what we're doing today?
I don't know, but I'm sure it's going to be fascinating because I think it's got some really cool tech and cool food and so on.
It does. We are really looking to, I guess, an area of food and food production and food tech that is fascinating to put, you know, no finer point on it. We are talking to Tim Noakesmith. He's the co-founder of Vow, a cultured meat company that is one of the international leaders in producing meat from the cells of an animal rather than the traditional methods of meat production we've all been used to for, well, probably thousands of years. Now, it's a fascinating story, and welcome, Tim. I can't wait to find out more.
Thanks for having me, Kim. It's nice to be able to do this. We've been trying to do it for a little while, so I'm really glad to be able to kick off 2022 with this one.
Yeah, it is exciting. There has been some coordination challenges, but wasn't that? That's just another fine example of 2021. Okay, absolutely. So look, tell us a bit about you. How did you end up the co-founder of a cultured meat company?
It's a non-linear story. You know, I didn't know that this was even a thing that I could do. Probably around 5 years ago. My career has been anything but straightforward. I started out as a teenager working in a restaurant. My parents had a couple of restaurants, and so I worked in the kitchen, mostly as a dish pig, and then occasionally being able to cook something as well. This is the part of the story where I say I developed an amazing fascination for food, and that led me into my career, but I can't say that's the case. I really just wanted to get out of there. I don't think anyone that's worked at a family business knows that. So yes. After that, basically, again, non-linear, I dropped out of university. I was studying a business degree and I found it to be kind of a little bit too slow. And so I actually went and started my own business. And since that time, I've started kind of three or four different businesses, nothing necessarily to write home about. You know, some that I've grown and sold, and then others I've kind of retired unceremoniously. And they've been in everything from the music industry to, you know, working in blockchain payments with Bitcoin to cash and a series of other things, everything from nursing to art supplies.
Wow. Okay.
And so, you know, that beyond that, I ended up deciding to, you know, get a proper job and start building my career. And I built a career in something called human-centered design. And really what that is it's not design like you might imagine, kind of drawing boxes or something to that effect. It's really an obsession with the human mind and why people do the things they do, and working with companies to leverage ethnographic research, which is, you know, a nice way of saying getting to know humans, and using those insights to build products or services or businesses that ultimately service or give value to people more. And that's not what led me into cultured meat, but rather it is the lens with which I started here. So at some point in there, I realized that I wanted to have a massive impact on the world and that this is a really interesting toolkit to do so. And I stumbled upon food as the thing that I wanted to solve. So came full circle. I realized there was a huge opportunity to have massive impact. And we've got this kind of impeding deadline, which is the climate change that we're all experiencing at the moment. And when I discovered the technology of cultured meat, which I'm happy to kind of explain in more detail, I just fell in love. I remember I picked up a book and I started reading through this book, and it was called Clean Meat, which is kind of an old term for this. And when I put that book down, which would have been the same day, I said, that's what I do now. And so
wow.
Started kind of getting stuck in, basically.
Okay, so you're quite driven. All right, so you and George, I'm worried I'm going to mispronounce his surname, George Pepu.
Perfect.
Oh, look at that.
Nailed it.
So you and George founded Vow. Tell me, what did that look like when you started? Was it sort of the two of you in a laboratory? What did it look like?
It was that, but that sounds quite glamorous, and it was anything but. George and I were introduced by another food entrepreneur, actually, Nick Hazel.
Yes. So Nick Hazel is the CEO and founder of V2 Foods.
That's right.
We've had him on the podcast in the past, and. Yes, another industry leader and passionate about ensuring we can feed the world.
One of the most passionate and intelligent humans in food. An incredible, incredible entrepreneur. Yeah, so he introduced us, and George and I actually didn't see eye to eye on the opportunity around cultured meat. There was some time between when we first met and when we started a company, and really to kind of summarize that up, We disagreed on kind of how that would work, and then came together to realize actually we shared the same vision for the future, and all of the fundamental blockers to this technology actually from a first principles perspective didn't need to be true. And so we decided in serious zeal in April 2019, which is not a long time ago, to start this company, and we named it Vow, and we got kicked off. To answer your question, it wasn't a laboratory, but really it was a glorified shoe cupboard. We had some lab equipment in there for sure, but it was this room in this larger innovation center that we kind of could get for free by not making too much noise, basically. And there was no air conditioning in there when we wanted to work because they wanted to save money after normal work hours, and we still had full-time jobs. George would work under the laminar flow hood. I didn't have a science bone in my body at that time. I just really appreciated his thoroughfare for change. And so I'd dab his forehead when there was no air conditioning, and and we got to work with some fantastic, more junior scientists who were willing to give their time and their energy for us at the start of the business.
Now, you guys were the first to culture kangaroo meat. Is that correct?
that is correct. Yeah, we the first time anyone cultured something from an undomesticated species.
Okay, yes, that sounds much more professional than my, you know.
it was kangaroo.
Yeah, which is beautifully Australian as well. So what is that process? How do you do it? Like, where do you start?
You start, or the way that we start, and different people take different approaches, but you can get a small subset of cells from an animal, and that's really around the size of an almond is kind of all you need to start getting those first cell types that you need. All meat is made up of really the building blocks of meat are fat, connective tissue, or muscle cells. That's what all animals share in common. And so we will go out and isolate these cells from a very small biopsy from these animals. And then we essentially just put it in an environment that those cells are used to. So it's the same temperature. They get the nutritional media that they need, which is salt, sugar, amino acids. And they're put in, it's really like a glorified beer brewery. They're put in these large stainless steel tanks, kind of like if you walked into your local craft beer brewery. And in that environment, the cells essentially divide and divide naturally like they normally would in the body. And they divide, and then ultimately they come together to form complex structures, really, which is the equivalent of the meat that we have today. Only it takes a number of weeks as opposed to a number of years on a whole animal body-based model.
Okay, how big are these? I imagine one of the challenges then is trying to do this on scale, because that process sounds quite simple, but to how much of cells or how much do you need to actually then make enough that it has commercial viability?
The short answer is a lot.
That's good, because that's about the mathematical sort of scenario that I work with, you know.
The best way to think about it is, yeah, and these numbers get crazy really quickly. So, you know, every year we have about 300 million tons of meat produced around the globe, which again is just an unfathomable number. if you started to kind of think about, all right, we have these large tanks with liquid in it, how many of these would we need? The answer ends up being around the equivalent of what we use to produce the world's global supply of wine at the moment. And we all love wine, but we also love our meat too. And so while it seems absurd to be able to grow tens of thousands of these large, you know, 20,000 liter tanks to produce meat, it's really not dissimilar to what we have now for the global wine production. So it is massive, and we need to think massive to have an impact, but it is absolutely doable.
That actually sounds like that's an actual tangible comparison. Like you can sort of go, well, yes, that's a lot, but it's actually achievable because we're already doing it with another.
It's taken me a long time to figure out that comparison.
Yeah. Did you start working off on like, you know, the MCG? Because that's always a common one of like, how many times will we fill the MCG?
I've tried, you know, I'll say, oh, we've got to make this X trillion number of cells. And someone's like, I can't fathom a trillion. And I think, well, neither can I. So, but everyone understands wine. So,
yeah, that's right. One, and you did also mention beer. So really, you're on a winner straight away.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. So where, what are there particular animals that this works better with than others?
That's a really good question. I mean, if you have a look at, the short answer is yet to be determined. You know, there's thousands and thousands of animals out there and all of their cells kind of have different programming in them and that programming is going to speak to whether or not they perform better or not. What we're seeing at the moment is the majority of companies in this space around the world are focusing on the obvious solution or the surface level solution, which is to, you know, reproduce beef, chicken and pork, because that's what we eat today.
Well, that familiarity is what's going to make a consumer try it, do you think? Like that's, it's a familiarity that's going to be like, okay, I'll give it a go.
There's two sides to that coin. You know, on the one side, yep, that's something I understand. On the other side, you know, I've been eating chicken for a long time. And so I'm the expert now. You're the expert of chicken too, I imagine. And so I know exactly what it tastes like. So when I put something in my mouth, I'm not sitting there like a food critic, but my subconscious is doing it for me. And so if I start to chew on that thing and it's not quite exactly as I would have expected, then it triggers this thing that's kind of, it's called the uncanny valley. It's like something just isn't right here. And it evokes, especially with food, a bit of a disgust response. It's kind of like when you see a robot and that robot is got a human face, but it's just the expressions aren't moving quite as right. And it just seems really creepy. It's the same sort of thing that happens in your brain. You're like, it's the same thing, but it's not quite the same and it feels wrong.
Yeah, yeah, right. That's so true. I love that. The uncanny valley. Wow. I think that's even, that might even, I don't know. I'm going to work that into the title, everyone. You'll see it and then you'll go, ah, there it is. Okay. So yeah, that's okay. That's quite interesting that that would be the case because I'm imagining what does it look like once it's coming out of those vats and what form is it in? Is it like a jelly? Is it like a beef mince? Like what does it look like?
Yeah, I mean, to the early days of this is that it's in like an unstructured product, you know, more akin to a beef mince than it is a steak. There is, you know, if you imagine your steak, it's this thick three-dimensional cut and the way that it gets nutrients in the body is to use blood vessels and essentially blood vessels carries both oxygen and nutrients to the cells. When we're growing our cells, it's very difficult to kind of replicate those blood vessels. And so we start by more unstructured meat products, which actually make up the majority of the meat that we eat today. And then there's also a lot of really interesting novel processing that can happen beyond that to add really exciting and interesting textures in there as well. And, you know, some of our products have textures that you can't get from any other meat products. This is the thing is we assume that what comes off the animal and, you know, in this body-based model is actually what's going to be the most delicious thing. But we've proven that actually by building it from the ground up, you can have things that are these unique experiences. You know, we made a crocodile medallion that is more like a mixture of a seafood scallop and a crab in terms of its texture and melts in your mouth. Whereas a regular thick crocodile cut would be extremely tough and something you need to braise and cook for hours.
Oh, that's fascinating. So it's basically what you're saying is that it's not actually necessarily even about replicating an animal. It's actually about giving a whole new host of possibilities, utilizing the cells that come from that animal.
100%. You know, cells are an exciting ingredient and they're going to make exciting new foods. You know, we see in the plant-based world, for instance, that they're constantly trying to replicate the things that cells do or that normal animal-based models do. And what we end up with are things like, you know, saturated fats, be them like coconut oils or palm oils, are the best analog that we can get in our plant-based products. Whereas when you look at, say, culturing fat cells, the membrane of those cells is perfectly designed so that when it's at room temperature, it's that perfect solid. And when you cook it, it gets that delightful melt. The marbling and the Maillard reaction, it's that crisp flavor that comes over the top when you eat it. And that's only really achievable by leveraging what nature has done with animal cells, as opposed to trying to focus more on things like coconut oil, where people struggle because at room temperature, it starts to become a liquid.
And that's also, I mean, the global supply of coconut oil and, you know, can potentially head in the same direction of what palm oil did in terms of, you know, the impacts it's going to have on the environment if we're going to start to try and meet the levels of global demand and sustainable practices aren't used in its production. So this strikes me as, I mean, I really came into this conversation thinking we were just sort of going to talk about how we can use the cells of an animal to recreate the animal, whereas the potential for it is just so much broader than that.
It's staggering. Humans have developed to eat animal meat. We are able to digest it extremely well, and the membrane of the cell basically holds in this nutrition that becomes extremely bioavailable in the stomach. So you imagine eating like 10 kilos of spinach, you're really not going to get much of the fantastic iron that's sitting inside of that, because the way that the plant cell membrane is, it's not going to allow it to break down in your stomach to get that bioavailable iron. Whereas you eat a steak and it's way better transferred. And so we're looking into ways that we can use cells as this bioavailable delivery mechanism of nutrients. And so how we see meat in the future is taking out a lot of the things that are challenging or carcinogens in meat at the moment, and instead replacing them with things that make them super meat, things that make them incredible functions for humans, whether that's you want to eat a dinner that helps you fall asleep, or you want something that's got a complete nutrition profile. So no matter what happens, you know, if you eat it three times a week, you're probably in good stead from a nutrition perspective.
Oh, okay. That's just tremendous. Tremendous. Talk to me about Val's Noah's Ark cell library.
Sure. Yeah.
What is it?
This is something we talked about a lot in the early days, and I think less now. It was very novel then, and now it's kind of status quo for us. So, you know, the way that we look at it is, you know, we have, you know, over 14 different animals in our cell library. You know, by standard, people only eat five. We want that to be hundreds of animals eventually. And the way that we see this is each of the different cells from these animals have a different function to add, whether that's flavor or nutrition or texture. And ultimately, we want to bring together unique combinations of this to create entirely new products and ones that service people. And then the ultimate aim then is to bring the prices down by scaling this up in a dramatic fashion so that we end up getting protein and food products that are healthier and more delicious than what we've had before, but also cheaper. And so suddenly we unlock a way larger amount of human beings around the world that can get access to high quality protein. It's going to take some time to do. And, you know, we're almost 50 people now at Vow and some of the smartest people I've ever met, but we need more.
Oh, yeah, their intelligence would be intimidating.
I am the dumbest person in any room.
I think scientists are just some of the most remarkable, you know, humans in terms of just how their brains work and what they can create.
We kicked off another project here, you know, last week, and I went around the room going, all right, everyone kind of talk about your background a little bit. And the places it went is just shocking. You know, someone has the land speed record for the longest running electric solar car. Another person is background in autonomous vehicles. You know, there's bioprinting, there's genetic sequencing data. There is people who understand the microbiome better than anyone else. And it's just a start. It's crazy what happens in this building and the minds that do it.
Yeah. And look, I mean, this is a little off topic, but the fact that you have such a diverse group, the wealth of their experience that they bring that's not necessarily related to food at all is so valuable. And I think in the past, people haven't seen that. You know, it's like, oh no, you've got to have worked in this sector for this long. And whereas now it's much more a case of, no, we like how your brain works, and, you know, let's make that happen.
well, we've kind of thought about it this way from the beginning, and we were kind of forced to because neither George nor I are really central casting for starting a business of this kind. I didn't know what a stem cell was 5 years ago. And, you know, here we are kind of at the bleeding edge of it, and it's highly new food technology. And what we realized is that along the way, it's obvious that we just need really smart problem solvers. And when you give really smart problem solvers an incredible mission, and this is an important mission, if we don't change the way that we produce food, by the time we have 10 billion people on this earth, we are going to be in dire trouble. And so it's a stupidly important mission. And all of these people are first and foremost problem solvers. It just, magic ends up happening that way. When you empower them, you give them the tools that they need and the ability to just kind of do their own thing, magic starts to happen pretty quickly.
Let's talk about consumer attitudes towards what you're doing. Because, and I even think, you know, from our, you know, food and drink businesses reporting on this, that it is changing exponentially in terms of how consumers feel about it. But there still strikes me as a lot of like, oh God, I'd never do that. I'd never eat that. I mean, I guess it is, you know, how it's just going to be a matter of time.
It's definitely, I mean, it's a matter of time. You know, we don't like to rest on our laurels when it comes to time. You know, there's a lot of work that needs to be done to, you know, really there's an education exercise here. But our philosophy is relatively simple in that respect. And that is that if you make better products for people that ultimately solve problems that overcome their resistance to change, that it is a tried and tested method for having people change over to a technology. We're saying the same in electric cars right now. You know, people thought that was an absurd idea. Oh, it'll never go far enough. They said, you know, yes. We've heard that in our politics here in Australia. I don't want to be sitting by the charger all the time. When ultimately now, you know, Tesla, and small plug for Tesla, I suppose, but they have the best vehicles that are on the road and they're becoming affordable. And this is the same that will happen with cultured meat technology too.
Yeah. Well, another little side story to that is, remember when South Australia was having all of their power supply issues and they installed the solar, you know, the solar sort of system, at the solar system, you know what I mean. And last week or the week before, the state ran solely off that solar power for a whole week.
Now, do you know how that got kicked off? It was a Twitter battle.
It was, wasn't it?
It was Mike Cannon Brooks. We're very, you know, we're very grateful to have, you know, Mike's fund Grok participating in the work that we do as well. Very grateful to have their backing. But he basically put the call out to Elon, and Elon said, yeah, okay, we can get it done. And there you go.
So funny. And, well, not funny, but I mean, so fortuitous. And I just think exactly, it's that whole scenario, and I imagine it's the same for Vow, that if you build it and you build it well, they will come.
It's like, and you know, we want to be careful with that too. I think it's ultimately about, like, Vow is going to be a house of brands. It's very unlikely you're going to eat a Vow product. The way that we think about that is food is nuanced, it's cultural, it's individual. And so if you can create products that are tailored or individual to people and put a brand around it that speaks to them as an individual, we think that's a really powerful method. In the same way that, you know, a lot of listeners, probably more here, will understand it, but most people have no idea who Mondelez International is.
Yes.
They're very familiar with their Oreos that they love and a series of other products that they have that no one would have ever thought was owned by them. And we see the same route happening for meat. You know, right now you don't really care which brand your roast chicken is, but we see that changing in the future because we're going to see an explosion of choice now because of what's available by changing the way that we produce protein. And so the future is, the way we'll win people over is by having brands that are more individualized and more tailored to them and giving people more choice.
Mm. Interestingly, in our trends forecast feature in our January-February issue, we look at the top 10 trends that Innova Market Insights has put out for 2022. And trend 3 is tech to table. And they found that 50% of consumers agreed with the statement that said, I believe that cell-based technologies can be the future of the food industry. And part of the reason for that is the decline in terms of the myths and the miscommunication around food tech, and that as the sector sort of progresses and we start to see more products on shelves, that's starting to dilute or that's starting to dissipate. But I think that the fact that 50% said that is remarkable.
I think it's a very good start. I look forward to it being 100.
Of course.
You know, I think, you know, and again, you know, all of this is hearsay until such a time that products are in market for people to be able to grab. You know, one thing that I think we see with humans, and part of the reason we started this company, is ultimately we speak aspirationally, but we choose with our wallets generally based on price or other things that are attractive to us. And, you know, there's all of this talk around plant-based products, and a lot of them are really good. We've come an incredibly long way, and I have a lot of respect for all those companies. But last year, we saw meat consumption completely outpace anything that we saw in the plant-based environment. The fact is, it's not working. Meat consumption is getting higher because people love it. It's a really good product. And now people are seeing an opportunity to kind of, I mean, you know, for lack of a better way of putting it, have the cake and eat it too. You know, you can have that meat product, but without any of the kind of destructive repercussions that come as a result of the intensive feedlot farming that is traditionally put alongside eating meat.
Yeah. So look, finally, looking ahead, you guys had a seed raise, some seed funding last year that secured more than 7 million. Where are you heading? What are the big ticket, exciting, hot items for Vow?
Yeah, well, we're going to have an announcement in the next couple of weeks around, well, related to funding. But really, we have massive plans. You know, this year we want to produce 1 ton of this meat, which is really going to show the world that we're capable of doing that, and we're really here to scale. But ultimately, a lot, if not all of our focus is on selling a product at the end of this year. There's a lot of companies in this space, but not a lot of commercial activity happening. And so we are going to have a product launched. It's going to be a crocodile-based product in fine dining establishments in Singapore.
Wow. That is exciting. And that actually sounds a lot nicer than the chicken nugget that was the first.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, hats off to those guys.
Oh, absolutely. I don't want to. Yeah,
I'm, you know, not, $10 million for a chicken nugget?
I know.
We can do better.
Yeah, exactly. Tim, this is just tremendous. I'm so excited to see how this basically keeps moving and keeps growing exponentially. And thank you so much for sharing the Vow journey so far, but also really shining a light on the potential of cell cultured meat. And it's really tremendous. So thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Kim Grant, it's a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me. It's great to be here, and I'm glad we could finally get it done.
Thanks, Tim. It's been worth the wait from our side to get to this point, and absolutely brilliant. Really been nodding away and enjoying what I've been listening to here. So thanks again. And of course, thanks to Kim, and thanks to our audience for joining us for this episode. Don't forget, if you like this episode, you can like us on iTunes or in your podcatcher of choice, because that's going to help people discover our episodes. But we'll be back in the not too distant future with another informative episode. But until then, have a great day.
You've been listening to the Food and Drink Business Podcast, produced by Southern Skies Media on behalf of Food and Drink Business, owned and published by Yaffa Media. The views of the people featured on this podcast do not necessarily represent those of Food and Drink Business, Yaffa Media, or the guest's employer. The contents are copyright by Yaffa Media. If you wish to use any of this podcast's audio, please contact us via our website or send an email to editor@foodanddrinkbusiness.com.au. You can subscribe to this podcast via your preferred platform and read all the latest news on Australia's food and beverage industry at foodanddrinkbusiness.com.au.
You've been listening to a Yaffa Media podcast.